With all the stories that matter across the Northwest, it's Greg Hughes on the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio.
All right, hopefully you enjoyed the last hour of the show there. Thanks again to Emer, Pat and Liam for their contributions. And also thank you so much for what you have been sending in. I'll get to that in a moment. We were going to be talking about RTE's decision to broadcast the coronation of Britain's Charles as king. There's been quite a bit of opposition to that. What do you think? I mean, it's across every UK channel, British channel, but RTE are broadcasting it. There are people that believe it is an attempt to launder the reputation of the monarchy. Will RTE also now be broadcasting the coronation of other kings and queens across Europe and the world? What do you think? Do you welcome, because your views are the most important of all, don't you know, do you welcome RTE broadcasting 4 hours of coverage of the coronation, or do you think they should put Judge Judy on and Dr. Phil instead? Okay, let's get to some of your comments here. Have farmers ever made money? Since I can remember, they've been complaining if the job doesn't pay, get out, they say. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael members have no issue with media when they are pro-government, independent and RTE, for example. Government parties need to concentrate their efforts on delivering for the good of the country and not obsessing over Sinn Féin. The government conducted a poll on introducing hate speech laws. 70% of the public were against new laws, but the government and Sinn Féin ignored the public by pushing it through. Kind of right. What actually happened was there was a public consultation, as there is with an awful lot of things. 70% of the submissions either were against it or had concerns with how far the laws reached. So it wasn't necessarily that they were against it or voted against it, or it wasn't a poll. It was a public consultation. But it's still not insignificant, but just facts matter. Does this mean that those who constantly knock and mock the Catholic Church can be taken up for hate crime now? Well, if people make derogatory comments based on someone's Catholicism, and it's not just that it upsets you, right? This is not about being upset. This is about it being properly, truly offensive. Well, then presumably so. This is all due to people trashing the government, saying what they think of them, which is useless, believes this caller. Another dress it up whatever way they want, but I think it's all about silencing people. I have to agree, childcare facilities are glorified babysitters and so heavily legislated. That's off the back of a comment from Professor Pat there. Another caller says, we need to protect our farmers, we need to protect our fishermen, we need to protect our freedom of speech or we'll have nothing left. Again, we don't have freedom of speech here, is the point I was trying to make. It's not enshrined in the Constitution. I think we're heavily influenced by what happens in America and what's governed there. And someone made the comment offline, it's also about this conversation about our neutrality. Again, we don't have neutrality as such. We have a policy, right? But it's not in our constitution, nor is freedom of speech. You have the freedom of expression, but that does not transcend the rights of others not to be offended by what you have to say. And that is the way it is now. How can a store decide price and farmers lose, not right? Well, that's the situation, it seems. Another caller says, should people not expect cheap food? Question mark. That's a question I posed. Not an opinion, by the way, a question. And then the caller goes on to say, should we be robbed every day at the shops? Pay the farmers properly and the stores will still make a profit. And if they don't like it, they can close. Why is the government keeping big business happy all the time, but not the people, they say. Committee of Agriculture are long overdue to do a study of each county to figure out how to be most beneficial to the people of the country. The day small farmers go out of business will be a sad day. They keep the land and play a big role in communities. Another caller says, Greg, what is all this money they used for Fort Dunree? Why is it not used to build houses for people or for the people who live in falling down houses? This is all wrong. How this money is being spent, I think people's lives should come first. Again, though, and I said this yesterday, not going ahead with Fort Dunree doesn't mean a single house would be built. There is a fund for house building that the government can't actually spend. There's been a massive underspend in consecutive years in the housing Department of Housing. So not progressing Dunree or not progressing that development in Ballybuffet, which was mentioned yesterday, does not lay one single block. The money is there for housing. They just have to figure out a way. They would argue that they have already and they're working on it. They have to figure out a way to deliver these houses. As I say, it's not money coming from housing going to Fort Dunree. They can't spend the money allocated for housing as is. Why should poor working families who pay for everything, subsidised farmers who pay no tax, have their kids educated for free? If they're not making a living, sell up and get a job, pay their taxes and contribute to society. Just because you're left a parcel of land, society should not have to pay to keep your upkeep. I don't think everything you stated about farmers there is true. Farmers, of course, pay tax. Everybody pays tax. And I know many farming families can't afford to send their kids on to education. So we also know that not to be strictly true. A lot of stuff that we get in the shop and pick up off the shelves are produced by farmers. And the multinationals are making a fortune. The factories are making a fortune. And your neighbour is the one that's struggling. Everybody else is making money, but the farmer is struggling. That's not fair, is it? Would it not be better? You could still get your milk and butter at the same price, but if farmers then were paid a decent price for the production of these products, rather than some company based in Germany or Britain or elsewhere making massive profits. You know, I don't think us, the consumer, should turn against farmers or vice versa when there's so many faceless people and companies in the middle that are making an absolute fortune. Why do we fight against each other rather than focusing our attention on the common enemy? Now, I use that word because it's the only words that fit. I'm not saying they are our enemy, but do you understand maybe where I'm coming from? Right, okay. Listen, thanks for all your calls and comments. Keep them coming into us. Loads coming up on the show over the next couple of hours. Michael and Fionnuala will be joining us just after 11 as well, which should be a bit of fun as we ease our way into this bank holiday. It's not a bank. Why did I even say bank holiday? I meant to say May, into this May weekend. All right, let's take a break. Okay, welcome back to the programme, and it's a good morning now to Senator Eileen Flynn. Senator, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
No, it's good to have you on, Eileen. I wish we were speaking in different circumstances. You've publicly spoken of a recent experience you had whilst in Dublin. What happened?
I got a taxi back from the city centre, and it was to Ballyfermot. Now, Ballyfermot is a working class area in Dublin, and the taxi driver says to me, "Okay, have you got money?" I said to him, "Of course I have money." He took me out to Ballyfermot. When he realised I was going to a Houghton site, he stopped about 200 yards away from the site and said, "Oh no, I'm not going in there." He said, "There's caravans in there." Now, that's all he said. So I said to him, I said, OK, I won't pay you. And he said, "No, you have to pay me." So he said he's going to call the guards. And I said, "Actually, you're committing the crime, so I'll call the guards." And I did call the 999 emergency service, and I got through to a man that said to me, "Actually, this is a waste of Gardaí's time." And I was trying to explain to him, "No, it's not. He's been, as in my opinion, he's been discriminating against that. He wouldn't take me into where I needed to go." So the operator said to him, "Why won't you take this woman to her home? This is what you're meant to do with by law." And when I told the operator I was a public representative, he did change his tune. He was very nice. And basically, the taxi driver wanted the operator to stay on the phone while he dropped me to my house. And the operator did stay on the phone, and he apologised when I got out of the taxi. The operator did say, "I'm very sorry," he said, "you had to experience this," because he could hear how upsetting I was, you know. Mm-hmm. The thing is, Greg, that the majority of taxi drivers are absolutely lovely, and they will drive into Houghton sites. Unfortunately, this is an everyday occurrence for members of the traveller community, is that where people refuse to even like takeaways, delivery services, that won't go into sites. And, you know, I do understand that in some places our people may have had somewhat negative experience with members of the traveller community, and that I totally get that. Like, people have negative experience with the settled community and people in different areas as well. But to target every single person with the one brush and to act out indiscriminately, like in a sense to say, "No, I'm not going in there because it's full of caravans," that's inappropriate and shouldn't happen in today's world.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'll get to that actually, Eileen, because I'd be very interested in your views on that. In relation to this taxi driver, do you believe he was ignorant to, you know, the realities of the fact that he could have just dropped you in, or do do you think it was an actual prejudice? If you know what, do you get where I'm coming from? Like, do you think he was, like, do you think he maybe has been educated through this process, or maybe he actually has, his views have been strengthened because of what's happened?
I speak about this a lot, that we are all prejudiced. Every single person is prejudiced. But when you act out in your prejudice and say, you know, I'm not doing this because, like, you're a member of the traveller community or because there's caravans, well, then that's what becomes discrimination. You know, so he was very blunt. Now, he didn't even mention the name, I'm not going in there because you're a traveller. He said, I'm not going in there because there's caravans and that it was a hot in sight. Mm-hmm. And again, I could totally understand, Greg, the fear, and fear is out there, the fear of the unknown, not known communities. This man has probably never met a traveller before in his life, but that, unfortunately, wasn't my fault, mm-hmm. you know. And then I am absolutely, like, even since I was a child, experience discrimination with people not delivering to sites. And for me, really, it's about challenging that. Who takes responsibility for it? Like, should the guards have come out and said, actually, you know, for what you're after putting her through, she doesn't need to even pay the fee, you know, because, mm-hmm. again, there's nobody held accountable. And when we, like, now, hate crime and discrimination and racism, they're all, like, they're similar, but they're very, very different. Mm-hmm. And I want your listeners to understand that. And I understand there's a lot of people who are fear and saying, oh, we won't have the freedom of speech. But people really need to know, free speech is not racism, it's not discrimination, it's not storing up hatred, planning to burn a traveller home, saying that actually travellers are going to be moving in here, so we're just going to put light to the building so that they can't move in. That's hate. That's absolutely hate, and it's storing up hate. So, like, people really, like, I'm far from a person who says people should be put to jail because of committing a hate crime. People need to be educated that it's not okay to store up hatred. It's not okay to not like people because of their sexuality, because of their background, and being pure hateful, you know, the transphobia, the homophobia, going out and attacking people, spitting at people's faces. I know of a Muslim woman walking over hatefully. Now, this is going back 15 years ago, and I've been campaigning for hate crime legislation more than the last 12 years. I think now with what's going on in society, this hate crime legislation is long overdue.
Okay, and I want to ask you another question about that. But you know, by speaking out of your experience, you knew perhaps, Eileen, what was coming. Yeah. And that would be effectively you setting yourself up as a target on social media for anti-traveller abuse, very, very strong language. You know, people feel that that is a space, particularly on Twitter, whereby because you have highlighted this issue, that they can target you with offensive names, stereotypes and what have you.
But the whole thing is I'm going to be targeted anyway because, you know, here a few months ago I used the word worster. Things is getting worse for refugees. And I got so much abuse on social media. It wasn't because of my language. What happened was the issue. And people are going to try to pull you down all of the time. But it's really about, now don't get me wrong, I do have my bad days where I could sit and feel sorry for myself and say, why the fuck did I even get myself in doing this? Is a word at the end of the day when you have two young kids to look after, when you want to live your life as well. But the reality is, you know, it needs to be challenged, and it is tough to challenge it. But the thing is, you're going to have haters out there one way or the other.
Yeah, I think there's a responsibility too, though, not just you, but other people, and maybe those not directly affected by it, to call it out as well.
Yes, but see, we all need to do it in a very careful and a strategic way as well. Like, racism is racism, and we need to call it out. And if I was to sit back and say absolutely nothing, now I haven't even read half the comments on social media, but I get that anyway. I get that anyway because I'm a member of the traveller community, and that's the harsh reality of it. And people don't think, and it's so easy, Greg, like, you know yourself, for being a journalist. Like, people can just attack you, and they don't have to take responsibility for it. And it's so easy. These are people who cover their faces. These are people who I think and I believe are actually ashamed of themselves. They won't put their real name on social media. They're just looking for anything to attack people who they see is less than them.
Okay. Finally, and I won't. I know you're busy, but just in relation to these new hate speech laws, there are people, a number of people, I don't know how great they are in number, who feel that this is designed to protect politicians, to stifle debate so that we can't talk about issues, social issues like transgenderism, for example, or immigration. There are people who believe that these hate law speeches are designed to stop that type of conversation so that governments can push their agendas through. What do you say to people who have that view?
I do think there's a fear, and I also think, like we see it in America, we see it all over the world right now, the rise of the far right. And, you know, I think they're spreading misinformation again. Now, I do understand people's concerns, and what we're trying to do as a civil engagement group in the Shannock is address those concerns. We all have the right to be able to have discussions, as we did open discussions around even the reproductive healthcare, around repealing the 8th Amendment, and it's okay for people to be educated. And I think now more than ever we need to educate people, but also we need to be very mindful that, you know, we have to look for equality for all. And I think a lot of the time, Greg, we forget about the ordinary working class person as well. Like, we have to be looking at adding a 10th ground of discrimination. And I do think your economic background as well needs to be added onto that the 9th ground to make a 10 grounds of it. And I think conversation is key, education, because when we know better, we do better.
Okay, no, good stuff, Eileen. Your hands are full there. Who's in the background?
Sorry, Billy.
Billy, all right.
we're here.
Say hello to Billy for us, will you?
At an exchange. Okay. Thanks so much, Greg. Thanks
for all right, take bye-bye. Care. See you, Billy. See you, Eileen. Thanks very much indeed, Senator Eileen Flynn there, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. A caller says, I'll not be watching the coronation, but I think it should be broadcast and people should have the choice. It's time for change, they say. There are young people who want to get on with their neighbours. All you have to do is switch it off. Okay, now, let's introduce our next guests, Tia Gallagher and Rihanna Doherty, students at Ross's Community School, Dunloe. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
And also Alicia O'Hart, a teacher. How are you getting on, Alicia?
Not too bad. Thanks, Greg. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, we had the students on a few months ago talking about their project, Menstrual Waves, which highlighted the lack of education in schools regarding the menstrual cycle. And congratulations, because he's had great success with the project, and you won the National Silver Award, a massive achievement. Well done to all of you. Tia and Rihanna, how pleased are you with this recognition?
Really happy. Awesome.
Yeah, okay. So talk to us about this project. Just give us a quick run through, Tia or Rihanna, whichever of you want to do it. Well, one of you's going to have to. I'm just going to say Tia then. Talk to us about it. Talk to me about the project, Tia.
What? Can you talk to you about? Oh, sorry, we just can't hear you very well.
Okay, that's no problem. That's my fault. So talk to me about the Menstrual Waves project, Tia.
Well, we started it when we were brainstorming for an idea, of course, and it was like one of the general kind of ideas that we could do something along the lines of. And then we like researched more and more and were shocked to see that there were little to no learning outcomes in any of the SPHE home ec or science syllabuses. And the ones that they are in are either extremely limited or like, you know, you can choose to do it. And so we decided then when we found that out that we were going to do the project on it. And it was kind of slow to start to get in contact with as many people as we could. And then we were on Highland Radio and it kind of went up from there.
Excellent. I'll tell you, you're saying all the right things, Tia. Rihanna, you've produced a book that helps women and understand the menstrual cycle, the impact it might have on them, and explains how they might feel, you know, things that heretofore might be, you know, not understood. And it's a booklet that you hope will be widely available, I presume.
This is the booklet here.
It's brilliant.
We felt that it would be more personal to the young girls themselves if we just made a booklet instead of having it as like an app, for instance. Because like it's like diary, like journaling. It's just very much more personal than apps, because the apps collect information from you, and this is more.
I think, you know, I think that's a... Yeah, no, it's fine. You're doing great, by the way, so just relax. Rihanna, I think that's a really good point in this day and age that, you know, an app would just blend into the home screen of everything else, isn't it? Whereas this is something that's tangible and you can pick up and read, and ironically, more likely to get your attention and feel more personal, just like you've been outlining.
Like, everything's on apps these days and it's just getting a bit too digitised. So like Rihanna was saying, for them it's like a sacred thing to sit down in their own wee space and like writing in a diary, to be able to track how they're feeling on that day, to really sit down and kind of listen to their bodies and write down their mood, their energy level, how they're feeling, if they have any symptoms, and track other things to do with their periods as well. That can be very helpful.
Yeah, and I think, I presume this is, you know, there's no harm fellas educate themselves in this area as well. I mean, obviously not going to be filling out the booklet as such, but to have a better understanding of what's happening. Tia, would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely think that it's a very important thing, because obviously like it affects everyone, whether you are a boy or a girl, because like, you know, most boys would like have either a daughter or like a wife, you know, or at least like a mom or a sister. And, you know, it's like really, it's quite personal to everyone in that sense. And I think that everyone needs to know a lot more about it to understand it.
Yeah, Alicia, what was the Croke Park experience like?
For me, sorry.
Yeah, any of yous. I'm just trying to give everyone a chance to speak.
Well, do you want to talk about the Croke Park experience? How did you find that?
We find it to be amazing.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
I think when they're working on their project, they're in a room once a week, and they don't realise that this is a countrywide thing, and that there's schools from all over the country working so hard as well. And I think when they're seeing the amount of students, and that was only 40 projects picked out of the country, so you're talking 700 something projects. So when you've seen 40 other schools and all the amazing work that they did, and, you know, for our project, to be up there with them, you know, was amazing. And then they presented to a range of judges, and he's fine, like, nerve-wracking, but good. And
is it a wee bit like Dragon's Den, that kind of a thing, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
And then we got a phone call to go and present again to another round of judges. And we knew then that they were being considered for the top three prizes, bronze, silver, and gold. So even to get that, like, we were shocked when we seen the caliber of the other projects. So they got to present again to new judges, and I think he's found that one more difficult. And then, just want to tell about the moment you swore crowned silver, second in the country.
Well, like, they kind of hinted towards like our project being second, and as soon as they said the name, we just jumped up. Yep. We were screaming. We ran right up and got the trophy.
I've never seen them run as fast.
And I think, do you know what's good about this is that it's really meaningful as well. I mean, it's fantastic to have that experience. Okay, it's you'll never forget that sense of when your name was announced and you won. But also, you've produced something that's very useful once the dust has settled. Do you know what I mean? That people will be able to use and access. And the more people, I think you'd agree, Rihanna, the more people that get their hands on this, the better, because it gives meaning to how one's feeling. And there's nothing worse than you feel something or something's changing. You don't know what it's about. And you search for answers and you attribute it to something else. This will help people through a very, for young people, already a very difficult part of their lives. It might just make some sense of some feelings that they have.
Because even like when the girls are explaining it to some of the teachers and to even their like older friends who have been obviously having the menstrual cycles for years, they don't know a lot of the information and are surprised by it. So, you know, they're educating a lot more than just the students, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And they've also done parents' information booklets as well that they've delivered and are in the process of delivering to local primary schools for them to give out to their 4th, 5th and 6th students as well, so that the parents can have a little bit more information.
And another thing that it's doing is normalising a conversation that I don't know, Tia and Rihanna, but perhaps maybe Alicia, you might have slight more of an insight into this, is that this is a conversation that would have been completely taboo not very, very long ago. You merely couldn't say the word period was almost a swear word, and it's not that long ago. So yeah, I think
there's still a lot of language has to be changed. You know, like if you look in any of the TV advertisements or anything, when they're talking about period products, they're still calling them sanitary products. They're saying basically that this is something that's unclean. You know, they need to change that just to period products. This is just something that happens to girls all throughout their lives. It's very normal. And they need to update that language to be more.
Yeah, well so the adverts that attract often most of the complaints are those for period products. So we perhaps still have quite a way to go. But anyway, listen, nothing but congratulations to you, Rihanna Doherty. Congratulations, Rihanna. And also to you, Tia Gallagher. Well done. It's an amazing achievement and a brilliant experience as much as anything else. And Alicia O'Hart, teacher as well. Listen, thank you so much for keeping us informed. And it's great to get you back on and to celebrate the success. Well done, all of you.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. Enjoy the rest of the day and your weekend, okay? Tia, Rihanna and Alicia there, okay? We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show in just a few moments. Okay, a caller says, far right seems to be one of the most effective name calls to stifle certain opinions that might create an obstacle to particular agendas or particular groups. That's not terminology we generally use. It certainly doesn't come out of my mouth. I don't think it's constructive at all. Just like to say, the farming is a 7 day a week, 365 days per year. There is nobody to phone in sick or no holiday pay or those extras. But if we didn't do what we do with the subs, the people would just have to live on water and weeds. And all food is provided by farmers, says another. Everyone needs the farm to survive. The grants farmers get are to subsidise the food. If they weren't getting these grants, your food would be double the price. That comes in from James in Fannin. Thank you very much, James. Right, okay. Is Noel Cunningham with me? Noel, good morning. Hello, Noel. Can you hear me? No, unfortunately, Noel is unable to hear me. I'm going to kick him out and then get him back in again, just in case there is a problem with our setup here. Right, okay, more comments though as we do so. Why is the chaos at our hospitals, ED, not making the national news except locally? No longer a trolley crisis, as they seem to have run out of trolleys. The hospital crisis is now taken as norm, just like the housing crisis and homelessness has become. Unfortunately, that's is how it feels. It should be much bigger a deal, I think, especially as we heard those stories yesterday. Noel, can you hear me?
I can indeed.
It's Greg here at Highland Radio. Noel Cunningham, everybody knows Noel, of course. The longest reigning ever, Donegal Person of the Year. He no longer has that crown, but we still love you nonetheless, Noel.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. How are you getting on?
I'm doing fantastic. Okay, now we put it out there, Noel, about RTE's decision to televise the coronation of Britain's King Charles. And to be honest, it's a mixed bag. Some people happy enough with it, others not so. What's your view? And we'll talk more about the whole pomp and ceremony of it, but RTE opting to broadcast it, what's your views on that?
I think they are doing absolutely the right thing. The viewer numbers tomorrow will prove that. You know, at the end of the day, you know, they are our biggest trading partner. We have made a huge contribution to Britain as an Irish nation. A lot of us went to England to work and were treated with great respect. A lot of the older generation who grew up with a kind of slightly strange relationship, you know, love-hate relationship with the royal family, will tune in and enjoy every moment. And apart anything else, we will not see this again in a lot of our lifetimes, nor have we seen such a spectacle on our screens because the Queen reigned for so long.
It's about 5 or 6 years ago since you met Charles and Camilla during their visit to Donegal Town. I think I've got the timeline. Maybe it's longer than that. Maybe it's much longer. I don't know. I'm terrible at times. You spent some time with them. What were they like as people?
Utterly charming. The Queen Consort is a delightful lady, good company, very earthy. And I know that the situation around sort of their getting together and all that has always and will always be sort of subject to various debate. But I found her delightful. She treated people on the Diamond in Donegal and everywhere she went on her visit here with great respect. He is fascinating, interested in people, interested in culture, history, interested in Ireland, has a love of Ireland. And he told me himself, in his own words, that Her Majesty had always wanted, before she died, to come and visit Ireland and how much the visit meant to her. So he's a very sincere, genuine man, a very spiritual man, a very driven man. And, you know, we scorned and we said things of him so many years ago because we felt he was out of step or a little bit sort of crazy. Now, a lot of what he was talking about, everybody's talking about. Conservation, global warming, our sustainability. He was on that years ago. He was ahead of his time. He's a very thoughtful man and a very charming man and a delightful man. And he is a big challenge because modern royalty, modern monarchy, they will have to alter the way of doing things quite significantly in order to still remain somewhat relevant. And they will remain somewhat relevant.
Do you
relevant.
Think they will? Because for me, and I'm not a royalist, I don't like sort of that hierarchy in any country. But is this kind of the last sting of a dying wasp? Because now we are hearing that a number of countries may now become republics through referendum. And also too, you know, people are very aware of the very difficult times that people are going through in Britain, much more difficult than we are here in Ireland in terms of cost of living and paying bills and what have you. And all the pomp and ceremony and the gold carriages, it just doesn't feel very 2023. And it just feels to me like you say we won't see this for quite some time. I have a feeling we'll see this is the last time people will see this in a British context, certainly on this scale.
Well, I kind of disagree with that because Prince William has the ability with his wife, the Princess of Wales, Catherine, to actually perhaps inspire a movement with his generation on matters conservational and, again, sustainable and all of that. Inevitably, after the Queen's death, there were certain countries going to decide to hold referenda on whether or not to keep the British King as head of their country. And naturally enough, a lot of them will decide no, but they will still maintain a close relationship with the British Crown because a lot of them have benefited greatly too. So it's a difficult, as I said, a difficult crossroads in the whole area of monarchy and in Britain. But in Britain, despite their situation now, which was also very much added to by Brexit and bad decisions made, and England is rather isolated because of that at this moment, nonetheless, the British public, by and large, have a love of the royal family. Certainly that diminished slightly on the death of Her Majesty the Queen, but it's still there, it's still strong, and they will look to monarchy and the government, I mean, sensibly enough, will make sure that it's nurtured too, because for trade, tourism, and prestige, the royal family have a huge contribution to make.
Now, for those who do want to watch it, and there will be a lot of people watching on, people who are interested in it, but also people who are interested in being offended by it. You know yourself the way it will be. It's going to be a very different experience from Britain's Queen's coronation. That was 70 years ago. People perhaps have seen this footage on news and what have you. This is going to be done under not only the mainstream media, but the social media microscope. So if people are interested in it, they're going to get quite the perspective.
Absolutely. You will never see anything like it. I won't in my lifetime, for sure. It will be quite the pomp, quite the ceremony. And with that, as you say, that blanket coverage that wasn't around all those years ago when Her Majesty was crowned, you know, when only the chosen few who could afford to go to a cinema if they were near a cinema saw it on Pathé News and such like. It's really fascinating tomorrow to see it in its modern context. And, you know, going back to what you said, Greg, and it's interesting, it'll be very interesting for all of us to watch and really see on our screens, whether we're watching it on an iPhone, on a laptop or whatever, a tablet, wherever, to see if it is screaming, this is totally out of step with modern world we live in, with modern Britain, or, you know what, we like a little bit of this, a little bit of tradition, a little bit of history, a little bit of you know, culture. It'll be there for all to see, which is going to be the most fascinating part of it. And the king, don't forget, is a much older man. The Queen's coronation was a very lengthy affair. Oh, my goodness. And I believe that His Majesty this evening at Buckingham Palace will leave early because he's hosting a reception, like our president will be there, for example. But he will retire early because he couldn't, you know, he wouldn't have the energy that his mother had. She, a young woman in her 20s when she was crowned. My goodness.
All right.
You know, so it's...
You'll be, if you can, I'm sure you'll be watching. Before I let you go, because I think you're like me, you have an interest in all things celebrity to some extent. Claire Burns pulled out of the running to host the Late Late Show. I think Ryan Tubridy's last show's this week or next week. Have you a preference as to who you would like to see host the Late Late Show? I think they're going to struggle, Noel, to get someone to take that poison chalice, particularly in 2023. But you must have considered someone that you think would be. I think you'd be a great fit for it. But anyway, who do you think might be?
I am on record as saying, and I will repeat it, and I was interested to read the wires early morning that Claire Byrne had dropped out. I think Patrick Kilty's the man. And he will be fabulous. He will be amazing. And he will be that breath of fresh air that the show probably needs at this point. It'll give RT an opportunity to kind of shake it up a little bit and move it around. And again, using a royal reference, again, make it more relevant to a different kind of audience. Yeah, I would put my money on Patrick Kilty.
Okay, listen, Noel, have a lovely weekend. Thank you for your time, as always. I really do
appreciate
it.
And I wish you and your listeners a very happy weekend, and thank you, as always.
All right, take care, Noel. Have a lovely day. Okay, Noel Cunningham there. Do you agree, disagree, 086 60 25,000? Very shortly, we will be joined by Michael and Fanula. Let me see. I'll get to some of your comments that are coming through on that. I'm trying to reach to the ones that are relating to that particular issue. But listen, a couple of comments before we go to the break on our conversation with Senator Eileen Flynn. Greg, that was terrible what Senator Flynn had to go through. People need to be educated that travellers are the Indigenous people of Ireland. I'm sure Eileen's people were here before that taxi driver. Another, maybe this taxi driver had a fear of calling into the site. I drove into a halting site a few years ago in mistake, and I've made sure it would never happen again because of my experience. Okay, that's different views in relation to that. We need to protect our farmers. We need to improve our large farming practices. Regenerative farming is the way to go in order to protect our health and indeed our planet, they say. And lastly, last comment, we forget the gift of the English language we received. Although it was only a byproduct of dominance, it's a good thing for us, believes that listener. I don't know if how many of you out there might agree. All right, 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Tell us, what have you been watching on the telly? What have you watched in the cinema? Have you seen something on the stage? Are you reading a good book? Talk to me about podcasts. Anything to do with switching off.